Coffee with Fleur podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the lands on which we've recorded each episode, which is the Boonwurrung people, and we pay our respects to their elders, both past, present and emerging. Welcome back to Coffee with Fleur. Ta-da! It's a different introduction, isn't it? I'm doing it this time, David. So, hi, how are you going?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's good, that's good. Now, I think we had a special reason for us to catch up. You've got your coffee in hand, have you?
I have, yeah. It's the usual Coffee with Fleur, but I thought it would be a good week for us to have a chat because it's Dyslexia Awareness Week.
Ah, okay.
And it's something that is on my mind at the moment.
Okay, so tell us a bit more about that. First of all, I mean, I've heard of dyslexia, of course. I'm a trained primary school teacher, so that's sort of awareness there. But can you describe what that is a bit more so we have that for context?
Yeah, absolutely, I can. And one of the reasons why we're having this bit of a different episode today is that I'm going to get a bit vulnerable. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about being neurodivergent and my own personal dyslexia, which I guess dealt with in terms of managing over several years, but have probably got to the point in my age now where I'm more able to accept it and understand it and talk about it. So okay. I'm just thankful for you for being open to providing that opportunity.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, dyslexia is just one of the four different ways that brains can be wired. If you're neurodivergent, there's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, autism, development coordination disorder, and dyslexia. And dyslexia people may know as people who struggle to spell words, it's very common, or struggle to read quickly or understand quickly.
Right.
And certainly all those things are things that I've struggled with throughout my life. And I guess I've reached a point in my life where, you know, there's no surprise to anyone who's listened before, at a certain age now, I'm 50 years old.
Wow.
Yep, there you go. And
it's a good age, everyone, if you haven't reached that yet, just so you know.
Just saying, Hifla. And just it's a case of finally getting to the point where I can accept who I am and what I bring to the world and being comfortable with that. And people might say, oh, that's the classic midlife crisis, but not really. It's something I've just sort of grown accustomed to over the last 5 years and 10 years. I haven't bought a Porsche.
Who can afford one of those?
Yes.
Or if you can, how do you afford the insurance?
Yes, I haven't bought a boat. It's just a case of being able to talk about this with a little bit more openness, and I thought Dyslexia Awareness Week would be a great time.
It sounds like a great opportunity, and doesn't sound like a crisis to me. It sounds like more of a something else, something more positive.
Yeah, I think over the last few years we've seen a huge leap in people reporting or identifying, I should say, as a neurodivergent.
Mm.
And I think part of that is the world is ready for that conversation more than it was. And probably there's more support for people and understanding, so they feel freer to talk about it. And if this, me talking about it today, helps someone navigate that world, then it's all been worth it.
Okay, well, do you want to take us back to when you first understood that? You know, tell us about the origins, I guess, of this.
Well, it goes back a long way. It's actually in school. And it's interesting you use the word understood, because I probably understood as in conceptually what it was I was being told and what I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. But it's only recently that I've truly understood what that means.
Right.
So there's probably something there.
Yes.
Basically, in psychology, being sensitive, being introverted, means that you process your experiences and environment in very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So real deep thinker. And being diagnosed as a dyslexic or neurodivergent has been challenging, and that all began when I was at school. One of our teachers said, oh, I think there might be a problem there.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
Probably around 12 or 13. It's sort of a bit foggy,
so
to be honest
with
you.
So sort of emerging teenage...
Yeah, high school.
It's challenging enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
At that age, yeah, so.
And I distinctly remember going along to special coaches and real challenging situations, being put in simple things like being asked to, you know, the magnetic letters of the alphabet that young primary school teachers, being asked to put the alphabet in order.
Right.
And I can remember breaking down, going, well, I do know this. I'm not that severe in that I can't recognise letters and put them down. So I'm conscious that there's all different levels of this, right?
Right.
And I'm definitely not more on the severe side, of, if that's the right word, of the spectrum there. But nevertheless, that was almost crushing my confidence because I was then thinking, well, do you really think I can't do this? And I'm not, what's wrong with me if I, and it actually got to the point where I couldn't put the letters in order because I was so devastated being asked to do it.
Right.
But then it looked like I couldn't do it.
So can I just ask to understand, because of someone who doesn't have this experience, is it that it was in your mind, so if we use that example, in your mind you can see the order of the letters.
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to transferring what's in your mind onto the, like physically putting them, that was the the disconnect?
Well, I think the challenge actually was being asked to do it.
Right.
Because I knew the letters of the alphabet. Mm-hmm. I could easily put them in order.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the confidence being sucked right out of me that was someone saying, well, come on, then do it. Mm-hmm. And you go, why are you even asking me this? I mean, I am not a primary school person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm capable of this. And there was a bit of a determination there going, oh, I can show you. I don't need to, you know, I need to prove myself without telling anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that not telling anyone really stemmed from school, where I did make the mistake of, at the time, sharing it.
Yeah.
And that resulted in it being spread around the school and then some bullying.
Mm.
And that sort of told me that the world wasn't really ready to have that conversation about neurodivergence. Probably not, you know, school of teenage boys, probably never ready to have that conversation. But also that I probably didn't fully understand the detail of the subject and really couldn't articulate it well enough. And so
it wasn't like you had the internet then.
No.
Neither. You couldn't just go, what is dyslexia, or research it easily, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 12 or 13, you're probably not going to sit down and try and figure out what all this means.
No, but to have the means to do it was more difficult.
Yeah, you had to go to get a book. Mm. You had to go to a special coach. You know, you were very much in the environment you were put in, rather than self-research, I guess.
Yeah.
Self-learning. So the upshot of all that was probably from that age right up until now, last 18 months, I pretty much hit it and tried to prove that I could perform and be successful without showing it. And so there's only my family and a couple of people at work who actually know that. Plus all the listeners of Coffee with Fleur.
So tell me more, David, in terms of So a teacher discovered that there were some challenges, and were you assessed formally, or was it?
Yeah. I can't remember the details because it is so long ago, but certainly there must have been some form of assessment because I went to this special coach.
Yeah.
And there was, I remember that being a regular thing throughout a school term or year. After that, I think I found that quite an emotional, intense experience and really didn't get on with it. I don't recall there being anything subsequent to that.
Yeah.
It really was finding my own way. I think possibly we set a base level of understanding, okay, that's the severity, which, as I say, is by no means huge. But yeah, it was just a case of navigating it on my own after that.
Yeah, especially I imagine as an adult after that, it's sort of, there you go, it's up to you to kind of live with or navigate, like as you described, in the situation. So how does having dyslexia impact you? And we'll get to the hiding bit.
Yeah, sure.
But just how does it play out for you?
I think it shows up in a few different ways. It's the very practical ways of not being able to spell very easily and not being able to absorb information rapidly. So everyone will be familiar with the old exercise in a training course or at school or at work where someone says, oh, read this and then we'll ask you to answer some questions.
Right.
That's it. And the moment that happens, I'm shut down. I can't even read the first sentence because I'm panicking so much. So there's all of that. I think also, though, over the recent years, learning more about change and well-being and neuroscience and how we're wired has really helped me understand not only the dyslexia but the fact that I'm an introvert and I'm a highly sensitive person as well. And so there's that whole combination of richness, as I now understand it to be, that provides me with loads of opportunity and ideas which other people may not come up with, but also has these practical elements that I have to navigate every day as well.
Right. So tell us more about that then.
The practical stuff, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a change and well-being coach. I can't spell the word change. Every single time I type change, it's change. And every single time the little red line comes up afterwards, and I'm do you know how many times I have to type the word change in my profession? A lot.
Yes, I imagine.
So it's little things like, I got it wrong again, that comes up, and those trying to absorb information rapidly without the ability to think deeply about it is a challenge as well. That said, when I do then think about it deeply, I find that some of the positive things about this really come to the fore.
Yeah.
And I can join dots and I can see connections and I can do different things that others maybe wouldn't pick up on.
Okay.
So there's a lot of positives as well, but it's just navigating the right way and having the courage really to speak up. And so if a facilitator says, I'm going to read these 400 words, then we'll ask you questions or we'll discuss it, having the courage to go, actually I'm going to need a bit more time than that, and explain why, and maybe say that to the facilitator before we start the course or something like that.
And it sounds like it could be of all the different kind of neurodivergent areas that one could potentially have, this one would be somewhat more invisible, would you say? Or
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, these three factors are my makeup: introvert, sensitivity, and dyslexia. Probably are all hidden. Certainly,
I don't know about the introvert.
Well, that's true, because the reason I started exploring that was I read the book Quiet by Susan Cain. And
she's so good. She's such a good advocate for introversion.
Wonderful book.
I think she made it okay. Sorry, I'm speaking as an introvert as well.
Yeah.
she made it okay to be an introvert, because growing up as an introvert myself, there was always this pressure to be an extrovert, like that there's something wrong with you if you're introverted. It's like, and it was so I love her for that reason. So keep going.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I remember back at school, we were talking about school, preferring to go and sit in the library and read my books than actually go and play sport out in the playground. So there's that. But in her book, she actually has a what she calls a quiet test, where you can test as to where you are on that sort of scale. And
that's a spectrum too, really, the introversion thing.
Yeah, you know, I think so.
There's different levels of introversion.
Yeah, and I did that test, and if you're interested, I'll link it in the show notes as well. But out of 20, I scored 20.
Yeah.
Which wasn't a shock, but it was the level of... was a shock. 20, so much so that I dialed one back and went, well, I can't be 20, here's 19 and a half, I'll give myself a half mark for that. I was just kidding myself. Yeah. Who am I kidding? But then it was interesting because I came into work and shared with a trusted colleague that I'd done that test, and she just replied, well, why did you need a test for that? I could have told you that years ago. Yeah. And that's what really got me started thinking, oh, hang on, this is interesting. Maybe the world has changed a bit and we're ready for that conversation now, if that's the reaction, not anything that was more critical in my mind.
Yeah.
So that really started. Then I read a follow-up book from Jen Greneman and Andre Solo, which is Sensitive. And they have a similar test, which is assessing whether you're a highly sensitive person. And I got 76% on that. I'm like, okay, here we go. Yeah. I really am this kind of person.
Yeah.
And it's just through that knowledge and acquiring that understanding, and you used the word understood earlier on, it's probably now in this stage of life that I've actually understood what all this means.
Mm-hmm.
But up until this point, I've hidden it and just tried to prove to everyone I can be normal.
Yeah.
And be just as successful, even though I'm navigating this world.
Yes.
And so that's how I sort of characterise it.
Yeah. So tell us why... Well, first, there's a couple of questions. One, what is a highly sensitive person? What does that mean?
Well, again, it's one of those things that's probably a little bit different for everybody. But the way they describe it is that, sorry, this is Jen and Andre in their book, Sensitive. They describe sensitive people as masters at anticipating the needs of others around them. The needs are often invisible to those higher up in the ranks. Sensitive people might read between the lines and recognise when their teammates are burning out, which is something we've discussed a lot.
Yeah.
Co-workers are often driven to a sensitive colleague because they feel able to speak about their frustrations, insecurities and fears without judgement. So I think we did an episode on psychological safety.
Yeah.
And I know we've done a lot about emotions in Coffee with Fleur.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's those people who are in tune with other people, which makes sense. I'm a change and well-being coach. Can understand people's other people's sensitivities and can relate to those in an empathetic way. And so they also instill a level of trust with whoever they're coaching or dealing with.
Okay.
So that's something that is quite a, I guess, a character trait of that person, of highly sensitive people. But you can be someone who is sensitive and extroverted. You can be both.
Yeah, of course. One doesn't necessarily come with the other.
Yeah, I mean, you can be outwardly expressive, right? Here we are doing a podcast, right?
Yes.
And who knows how many people are listening to it. We have listeners all around the world. So I'm quite happy to do that. But I've taken a lot of time to think about that in an introverted, sensitive way to build up to that. And so I guess there's no wrong way to do sensitivity or introvertism. It's who you are.
Yeah. So my next question was more, you said about hiding it. Why do you think you wanted to hide your dyslexia?
That's a really good question. I wonder, maybe there's a little bit of stubbornness in there. A little bit of competitiveness, maybe. Mm-hmm. And just, I guess, trying to prove that I could do it. Mm-hmm. And by it, I mean, I guess, be successful in whatever I'm trying. Mm. On my own merit. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I guess I've had some successes, and that's good. That's great. Would I have had those successes if I'd just been open in the first place? Possibly, mm-hmm. Yeah. Would I have progressed in my career in the same way? Well, maybe. It depends on how ready the world is. I mean, when I first started work, if you identified in this way, probably you wouldn't have got so many opportunities, or maybe overlooked for positions. Right. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I would have arrived at the same space. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I wouldn't have done, because I wouldn't have had those opportunities. I don't know. It's interesting to think about, because you can't rewind time.
That's right. And then, it's a long time. You know, you've been working with this for a long time. So to recall your thoughts and feelings over that whole period would be difficult. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think you touched on something. I'm trying to recall what you said exactly, but... Mm. It's this sense that there's a norm, and if we feel like we don't fit that norm, then it's something to hide, because there'll be some kind of rejection.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is, I don't think there's many people who would fit in the category of normal, whatever that may be. I think we've all got something that we're challenged with. Now, sometimes it's obviously more... difficult, some things are more difficult, more challenging than others. But it's interesting, isn't it, that as society we've got this idea of something that we want normal. But that goes back to what we were saying about, but we need diversity, you know, diversity of thought, diversity of skills and personalities and perspectives.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I think maybe generational change as well.
Yes.
Current generations, younger people, just, you know, that's who I am, that's what I do.
It's I love it that they don't, it's not even worth a conversation sometimes, because to them, it's like, so?
Yeah, and?
Well, yeah. So I do really appreciate that in the younger generations. It's great. And that just highlights sort of the progress, perhaps. And I'm sure it's not every time, every case, you know, but I feel like the younger people are far more accepting of this diversity than people perhaps our age and older.
Yeah, and that's maybe why we struggle with it before, that we talk about suppressed emotions and...
Yeah, and how unhealthy that is.
Yeah, and over previous time and decades that we've just not talked about these things as a society.
Yeah.
Now we do. And so people like myself are like a little bit more confident coming out and saying, hey, this is what I deal with every day.
Yeah.
Without fear of... judgment or recrimination.
Yes, yeah. Mm. And just, I guess, to wrap up, because our coffees are getting cold, and no, we have been drinking them as we've been going. What sort of message would you like to leave people with about being its diversity? Diversity. Week every week. Yeah. Dyslexia week.
I think it's just understanding of what people who are neurodivergent find easy and what they find challenging. And just that, building that understanding. So, for example, it's challenging for me to deal with strong emotions, especially anger, stress or disappointment. As I mentioned, I find it hard to focus under pressure or scrutiny. So read this and then we'll ask questions about it.
Yeah.
It's challenging for me to be overwhelmed with a lot of things happening at the same time. or be in harsh settings, or, you know, something like a horror movie would be my worst nightmare, or a violent movie. I just could not cope with that. But then on the flip side, it's easy for me to read people's moods and emotions, which you might expect in my role, but maybe that's why I found myself in the work that you and I do. I can do slow, careful work, and I can notice details that others ignore. For example, there's a great phrase in the line in the book where sensitive, where they said, you notice people's micro expressions before they put their mask back on. In that split second, you've noticed it and you've taken it in and you've understood exactly what's going on. So that's interesting. And then finally, connecting dots and thinking of creative problem solving ways and just completely off the wall ideas that maybe other people wouldn't have. So there's so many gifts to this. So,
That's like really, I love that way you've put it, is around gifts and seeing the new neurodiversity as a strength or the strengths that you can tap into rather than the than seeing it as deficiencies.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it does all come at a cost. I find myself being utterly drained at the end of the day. However, by understanding that, I can manage that energy correctly so that I'm supporting other people.
Yes.
And managing my own way of approaching that with the work that I do. And it's, I guess it's fundamental to my ability to support other people through change and challenge and look out for their well-being is understanding my own.
Yeah.
And hoping that by having this conversation, people have an understanding of who I am, but also think about others in their team and in their group of friends who may have similar traits and what how they might see the world as well. I'm certainly not looking to change how quiet or sensitive I am, far from it. I'm embracing it now. Nor am I trying to hide my dyslexia anymore. I think it's a really good thing and it makes me who I am. And I think really it's just that I'm finally understanding myself and I'm in a position to be able to explain it.
And that's so
good. I don't think I could have explained it to anybody else, Fleur, so thank you.
No, you're very welcome, and thank you for being vulnerable, David, and sharing that that with us and encouraging others to, you know, embrace themselves, whatever that is. And yeah, I think hope that gives some hope and some inspiration to others. So
yeah, well, if anyone out there is listening to it, there are many resources available online, obviously. The world is a different place now. You can find help. You don't have to go to the library and get a book or go to a special coach. You can find this stuff out and start considering it yourself. And the world, as I say, is more open to the conversation, and we wouldn't be recording this right now. And hopefully if just one person listens to this and goes, oh, actually I'm more comfortable with who I am now, then it's worthwhile us having had this chat.
And interestingly, David, you've just reminded me someone that I followed in the psychological space talks about the importance of self-acceptance. And I think that's kind of what you've highlighted. So we talk a lot about self-esteem, but it's actually self-acceptance that's the really important thing for our well-being, is accepting. And if we can get to that place where we accept who we are, warts and all, so to speak, that's going to be more helpful to our well-being than our esteem as such. And the other thing you've reminded me of, which might be resonate with some people, is if anyone's familiar with Leonard Cohen, the artist, he's got a song and there's a line in it that says, there's a crack in everything, but that's where the light gets in. And I think that's a nice way of saying we've got all our imperfections, but that's where our strengths come from. So it's kind of, the point is not to be perfect, but to have, and that's where I think that acceptance and embracing all of ourselves is really helpful for our well-being. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fleur.
My pleasure. Thank you, David. Thank you for sharing. And we'll catch up again very soon.
We will. Thank you.
See you.